Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Scrimshire. He's the entrepreneur in residence at New Wave. And confusingly, for those of you listening, this might be one of those times where you can't tell if it's my voice or Mark's voice. Mark, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Nick, it's great to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Mark, your long storied career in healthcare data, the exchange of information, building out solutions in the cloud. Tell us a little bit about what you're focusing on today and what's exciting you.
Okay, well, the reason I'm at New Wave is I was actually brought into the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services back four years ago as an entrepreneur in residence to work on CMS's Blue Button project. Our vision was to create a data developer-friendly and standards-based data API for Medicare beneficiaries. And that's basically what I've been working on. So the first year or so was really about putting together a proof of concept. I moved in onto New Wave's contract 3 years ago and have been working on that to actually get the proof of concept into production. And that was what was released in March of this year by CMS as Blue Button 2.0.
So for those of you that don't know what Blue Button is, maybe you could just explain briefly what that is and what it means to the people.
Okay, so Blue Button actually goes back a long way. It goes back to, believe it or not, 2010. And there was a meeting at the Markle Foundation and people got together and basically said, wouldn't it be great if you could just, you know, sort of log into your, you know, health systems portal and press a button and take away your health record so you could actually use it. And so that was the gestation of the idea. And so the VA, the DOD and CMS implemented that way back in 2010. But the problem with that is, and I know people that have done this, they've downloaded their 3 years worth of claims history from CMS and made the mistake of printing it out. And they get 1700 pages of new courier font data that is not data. You cannot do anything with 1700 pages. And so, you know, going back to 2014-15, I was asked to come in as their entrepreneur in residence and really turn that into a data service, something that could be make that data useful. So moving the bar from trying to understand what this big file was to being able to target into the actual data. I can tell you, I've lost, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks of my life to trying to parse that text file. It's not a fun job. So we have worked on producing this developer-friendly, standards-based API. So there's lots of organizations out there that provide this, what in technical terms is view, download, or transmit. And what we've done at CMS with Blue Button 2.0 is really leverage the movement that's been going on around standards in internationally and put out something that is being now held up as an example for the rest of the industry.
So as you think about that, so that's a long journey, just, you know, in healthcare terms, going back to 2010 and then obviously your participation. And you know, I've seen it. I've seen the sort of progress. I've seen Blue Button version 1. We're now Blue Button version 2. As you think back to that, were there any sort of inflection points, some insights that you brought or other people brought that really sort of moved the needle significantly that you think others could learn from? Because we all want it. I mean, this is great for CMS, but what about for, you know, those of us that are not participating or can't get to our data in the public domain?
Well, I think back, HIPAA was published in 1996, the Healthcare Portability Act. But it really was, in many cases, was used almost to avoid portability. And so one of the key inflection points I actually really lean on is the work that was done by the Office of Civil Rights at Health and Human Services. And about the time I was starting the project, so 3 years ago, they put out guidance around the HIPAA privacy right of us as consumers. We as consumers are the only people with the legislated right to our data, right? We're the only people that actually have a right to own that. And so they put out some guidance that basically said, as a consumer, I can direct you, Mr. Doctor, to send my data where I want it to go. And the other thing they said is, I can give you that instruction electronically, right? So if I can go onto your portal and say, send my data there, that is good. So that those two things I've actually leveraged in the way that we've built the Blue Button API. So what is happening with Blue Button 2 is the beneficiary, the Medicare beneficiary, is using their HIPAA right of access to direct their data to an application that has been authorized to connect to that API. So that a technical bent on that.
Fantastic. So, as a side note, I'll put into the notes for this show and on the blog post, something that I've picked up from that time. I remember it vividly. I actually carry around the OCR document that talks about my rights to access. I just think it's fantastic. It's something that's still valid today, and that's 3 or 4 years later. So I appreciate you sharing that. As you think about the sort of movement today, so that's what's happened with the Blue Button. What's the progress? What's going on, and what's new in this space of sharing data today, building on that?
Well, there's a lot going on. We were lucky in terms of timing. We've actually needed the industry to mature, and if you're familiar with HL7 and the FHIR initiative, the FHIR specification, that's Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resource Specification. It really has taken hold. So what happened, the ONC is putting a lot of support into HL7 FHIR. And what happened is EHR vendors were being pushed to provide interoperability requiring an API. So they mobilized around FHIR. This was all happening about the same time as I was starting out on our project at CMS. And so I really decided to build on top of that because, let's leverage the community that is building there and existing work that is being done. So basically building on the shoulders of giants. What if you look back in the history of the development of interoperability, we had HL7, they had version 2 and version 3, and those are used by the industry for moving a lot of data around. But most of it is back on version 2. Version 3 was just so complex that nobody really bothered implementing it. So I think of FHIR as a reset that was designed to be implementation friendly and leverage internet technologies. And so that really fits with wanting to produce a data as an API. And so we basically built on that. And I actually got involved with the FHIR community and work with them to specify some of the resources that we wanted to use to publish this claims information for beneficiaries. So that's been, it's been a case of seeing how helping the industry to mature.
So there's an interesting point in there that I pick up that I think is important, that excessive complexity essentially inhibited the use of those standards. Yeah. And it was FHIR, and I'm going to ask you to explain that, and I'm just going to say FHIR is FHIR. That simplification or providing something that's maybe imperfect, I think this is one of the things that I really sort of hone in on. Don't let perfection stand in the way of progress. And when we try and include so much, it just becomes overwhelming. And it was starting small and essentially, as you describe it, the reset. So could you explain a little bit about FHIR and what that is and how that came about?
Yeah. So if you go to hl7.org, there's a great wiki for FHIR, and I actually describe it as it's a text-based version of YouTube. You go in there and you just keep linking through for hours on end. It's a fantastic resource. But the real difference is not that it's a new specification that is, sort of REST-friendly and, it's all modern technologies. FHIR is not necessarily simple, but the thing is, It's been built from the ground up with a focus on being able to implement. So that we quite often in fire talk about, is it an 80% solution? You know, we're not trying to deal with that last 5 or 10% of real esoteric stuff. We're trying to deal with the stuff everybody deals with every day. And so the way fire has worked is there is this really active community. So I'm getting ready to go to San Antonio in January for a weekend at a connectathon. And what we do at the connectathons is basically look at the spec and what we're trying to do with the next version and see if it actually works. You know, we're actually 200 geeks in a room trying to send data backwards and forwards using the specification. And that then informs the definition of that specification. So you end up with something not that has been prescribed from on high to say that must, you know, comply with this standard. It's here's a standard that works. Let's adopt it. So the other part of it is the community there that gets consensus so people move forward and implement. So the Argonaut as a community, as part of FHIR, has basically got 90% of the market share for electronic health record systems. They've all implemented that specification and they worked on it together. That's really the difference.
So if I pick up the right elements of that, it's the practicality of the standard. I like that. I think, yeah. You know, this focus on the 80%, it sort of reminds me a lot of, you know, the comparison we hear repeatedly around banking. Oh, banking was so easy. We did ATMs, but it was, I forget exactly, but it's somewhere in the order of 16 data elements. And, you know, yeah. Medicine is so much more complex. And, oh, if you're talking about a dose, well, it's simple, but then you start to dig into it and it's suddenly there's, you know, 57 parameters for dosing of a pill to somebody. And, you know, I think you're exactly right. Whilst we need to deal with that somehow, we shouldn't stop everything to be able to get to the 57 if 5 will do. And I'm making those numbers up. I'm sure it's larger than that, right?
Yeah. For the Blue Button 2 API, we ended up mapping something like about 1,300 different data elements into a number of FHIR resources, as they're known, you know, that define the patient, the coverage that they've got, and then the claims and the claim types that they have. So, it was a complex process that we went through at New Wave in building that out and then building it in the cloud and building it at a scale. I mean, we're talking, we've got data for 53 million beneficiaries going back 4.5 years covering in CMS terms, their Part A, that's their hospitalization stuff, their Part B, which is their professional, you know, doctor's visits, and their Part D, their drugs. So, you know, that's 12 billion records that we're delivering in the cloud. I also joke that CMS is really good at producing APIs, but they're more usually known as comma separated variable files, you know, those files you pull into Excel. So rather than going and producing our own version, I think that was one of the big things we did is saying, I want to put this data out in a way that's consumable by developers. How can we do that? And I looked at the FHIR spec and it's like, I'm going to spread this across 15 different resources. And as a developer, how do I piece that together? And so we went to the FHIR community and said, hey, you've got this resource called the Explanation of Benefit resource that's supposed to be patient facing. Can we use that? But it was a stub. And so this was back in version 2 of FHIR. And they basically said, well, if you want to help us define this, let's do that. So we did. And that's came out in release 3. And the interesting thing is, at least 4 or 5 payers took that resource and used it to send data to, you know, some of their business associates for other purposes, which tells us we actually made that as a useful resource that could be understood by the industry.
Right? What's shocking about this is that somebody made the EOB useful because for anybody received one, they're going to go, good Lord.
The joke in the industry is obviously the EOB is an oxymoron because it is neither an explanation nor a benefit. Yeah. But we try to make it that, yes.
I love that. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm delighted to have Mark Scrimshaw with me, entrepreneur in residence at New Wave. We were just talking about the EOB and the fact that that was an oxymoron like so many others in healthcare. So Mark, fascinating. I think, you know, done some amazing work, some tremendous progress. I've heard a little bit about this Da Vinci project. which seems like this might bring it to the masses, as it were. Can you share a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, so with what we've been doing with Blue Button 2.0, that is about effectively a payer like CMS, like Medicare, getting data into the hands of consumers. And, you know, if you've known me for years, I've been very much an advocate for patient empowerment engagement, and that needs data. So that's a big move. And, you know, I always view the patient as the de facto health information exchange. But the fact is, most data in the industry flows sort of between the payers and the providers, the doctors and nurses. And so one of the things that the industry is trying to do is improve interoperability in that area. So again, under the auspices of HL7, the standards organization, there's a project started up earlier this year called DaVinci, and it is really bringing together payers, actually the EHR vendors as well, and the provider community to work on interoperability. And the way they're doing it is like the Argonaut project in many ways, is looking at a use case and saying, how can we make this work? And having all the parties together, and they're then defining, what are we going to put into these different resources in the FHIR specification that we're going to share? And we're going to then, it also includes the mechanism for sharing, something called CDS hooks, or clinical decision support. Again, a standardized interface that's been developed. And I have actually been involved through New Wave, the company I'm working through. We've been engaged by the DaVinci project on a new use case, which is basically payer data exchange. So what we are doing is leveraging the work that's been done for Blue Button that says, here's a bunch of data about claims that can be released to consumers. How about that actually being communicated to providers directly? So if I turn up at a doctor's office to be seen for a treatment, or I'm in the ER, the provider could go to their EHR and they would do a query, and they would look up and pass some information back to the payer. And the payer would say, this is what I know about the patient. Here it is. So they actually get some information if they've never seen this patient before. Maybe their allergies, maybe their immunizations, maybe other encounters, but also maybe that history of claims, you know, so you see the medications that they've been prescribed and actually paid for. You may see the diagnosis that they had, the fact that they went to, I don't know, a chiropractor or whatever the plan paid for, and passing that data back to the provider, where ultimately they'll be able to say, well, I'll just pick these bits of information because they're relevant to me in my treatment of this patient. And so I'm actually co-leading that use case to actually take that claims information that is we've worked out we can release to consumers, and saying, well, how about maybe less, the providers are not interested in the financial piece of this, but the clinical related information, now let's put that into clinical resources in the FHIR specification, because those are more easily consumed by the electronic health record platform that doctors use. They don't know how to deal with this thing called the EOB, the explanation of benefit resource, but they do know how to deal with a patient record, a condition record, a location record, a practitioner record, a medication statement, and so forth. So that's what we're doing. We're actually defining what that implementation guide is going to look like. But really, it's an extension of really getting data to flow for the benefit of us as consumers.
So I think that's, you know, that just builds on one of the central tenets in my mind, is that ultimately the payers know the most about everything that's going on, because if you follow the money, you follow everything. That's where all the data is. It's just really strange to me to consider the fact that that was never the case, that this is like a new concept, that we weren't doing that. And, you know, some of that is about interoperability, I think. I want to be sure that I heard you correctly. So this is, you know, payers to the clinical team, but is this also to the patient? So that same data and making that same data available to the patient? Because I know you're passionate about that too.
Effectively, the data that would be released by the payer to the to the provider is a subset of the data that is being defined for the blue button too for those commercial payers as well.
Right.
Okay. So it's just presenting it in a different format that can be more easily consumed by your practitioner.
Right. So it's never a data problem. It's a filter or transmission problem.
To your point, this is really, well, why hasn't data been flowing? Well, the industry has been very much focused around fee-for-service for so many years. And the, one of the big transitions, which CMS is very much pushing as well, is this move towards, paying for outcomes. So whether you call it value-based care or whatever, but it's really about, we're trying to deal with you as a patient to lead you to and help you to better health, rather than I'm going to charge for each X-ray I do. And that combined with improved interoperability is leading to, payers are saying, I'm not going to pay for every X-ray. If you did one, 2 weeks ago, now there's an incentive to go find that and look at it rather than doing another X-ray, right? So that it's this combination of both things. It's the policy levers plus the technology are coming together to really make the difference.
Yeah, so the availability of that, I think there was some perverse incentives in that fee-for-service system that, I don't think people genuinely, the majority, I always believe in, the goodness of people. I think what ended up happening was in part, the inability to get to that X-ray drove some of it, but also, hey, it's another fee. And I think this sharing of data, so that's not only better from an outcome standpoint, but think about it from a patient standpoint, not being jabbed or X-rayed or having all of these tests, which, in many instances, they wouldn't necessarily understand why and just accept it because that was the nature of the care that was received.
Yeah, there's other stuff that we're doing at New Wave as well. We're involved in a project in New York, working with Medicaid patients. So that is in many cases dealing with community-based or faith-based organizations delivering care in the community. And there's a real challenge there because covered entities like you as a doctor or your health system is really limited by HIPAA about what they can do. They can share information with what they call business associates, but they can't share them with, this community organization down the road, but the consumer can. And that's the really key thing about Blue Button is it's the only API in the industry today that allows you as a doctor, as a covered entity, to share with, for example, the local church, because the consumer is making the decision to share using their HIPAA right of access. So it's the only API that bridges that gap between the community and based organizations and covered entities. And that is brilliant because 90-odd% of care happens in the community. It doesn't happen in the doctor's office. So if we can improve data sharing to those organizations so that they can help you get to the services you need, that's only going to do good things for consumers, for patients everywhere.
Well, so as is always the case, we run out of time, unfortunately. It's been fascinating. I think there's just some great work and, all credit to you. I think you've driven a lot of this. It's been, not just a pet project. I think it's been, a central tenet of everything that you've driven and also part of your patient engagement. I think that's part of the driver here. So it's been a real privilege to talk to you, Mark. I'm so grateful that you had the time to join me on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Nick. It's always a pleasure to get to sit down and chat with you and, happy to come back. And yeah, this has been it's a passion. And like so many other people in healthcare, you don't do it necessarily for the money. It can be nice, but it's about trying to do good things. And I've just been privileged to be able to do this work at CMS. They've been really supportive. It's been brilliant.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.